This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:03. It's great to have you with us for the Wednesday edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Cisco Cotto. The Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park. On today's Noon Business Hour, retirement planning mistakes to avoid. It is Personal Finance Wednesday and a double dose. We'll also talk about how to prepare your college students to handle money while they are in school. A closely watched report from the housing market is out today. We will break that down. That's in our next segment. Right now, President Trump is looking at the German bond market, appearing to praise its negative rates. Let's learn more. David Jones, chairman of DMJ Advisors, based in Denver. He's author of the book, Understanding Central Banking. David, let's just, I guess, at the beginning, get your position here on negative rates. Do you see them at all as a good thing?
Negative rates are a disaster. I stand to differ with the president on that issue. Let's take Germany as a perfect case in point. They're teetering on the verge of recession. The European Central Bank sets monetary policy, of course, for Germany, and we have seen those negative interest rates. If you invest in a 10-year German bond, hold it to maturity, you get less back than what you invested. That turns finance on its head and means that money that could be invested in Germany, who needs it, is coming to the U.S., and that's one of the reasons why our 10-year bond yield is so low. Everybody's coming to our positive yield. So I couldn't disagree more with the president on those negative yields.
Yeah, and now explain, people hear negative interest rates, something that seems so foreign. It kind of give us a thumbnail sketch. What are we talking about when we say negative interest rates?
Well, first of all, we haven't seen them for 5,000 years of commerce, so it's quite unusual, to say the least. The idea here is that when a central bank gets so nervous that it continues to ease even after it pushes interest rates down to zero and then below, it simply means that so much money has been pumped into the system that, and there have been so much bidding for the investments in that country that they've produced interest rates below zero. And like I said, it's a simple issue. If you invest in a security that has an interest rate below zero, a negative rate, you will get back at the end of its maturity less than you put in it. No one in their right mind will do that, and that's exactly why all that money has flowed out of countries like Germany into the U.S. Thank goodness for, I'll take issue with the president on another issue, Chairman Powell, who had some foresight while our economy was strong, moved rates up to a little bit over 2%. So Powell has some room now to make a mid-cycle adjustment with a rate cut or two and still have positive rates. So Powell has the economy in good shape. Germany is a disaster.
And is that, it sounds like you mentioned this, is that actually bringing money to the United States at this point because of what's going on in some other markets?
Exactly. And it's not just Germany. There's about $16 trillion in negative securities around the world. Japan has negative rates, for example, because they've pumped too much money in. And so it's highly disturbing to countries that have negative rates. And as investors leave those countries, it's going to hurt their investment and their economies severely. For now, at least, thanks again to the foresight of our Fed chairman, we have that money flowing into the U.S., and the U.S. economy is in decent shape, as we've just seen on those good consumer earnings reports.
David Jones, always good insight. Thanks for being with us. David is chairman of DMJ Advisors, author of the book Understanding Central Banking. Sales of existing homes in the U.S. rose more than expected last month. Let's talk about what caused the uptick. Josh Shapiro joins us, chief U.S. economist at the New York-based economic and market consulting firm MFR Inc. So, Josh, what caused the uptick?
Well, your guess is as good as mine on a month-to-month basis. I think lower interest rates can't be hurting, that's for sure. We had some indication that we were going to have a good month because the pending sales index, which is a leading indicator of this, was showing strength for this month. So it didn't really come as a big surprise to markets that we had a gain here.
Now, if mortgage rates continue to drop, will we expect that number to pick up even more?
Well, I think that more important than mortgage rates is going to be the direction of the labor market and whether people are confident in, you know, in their jobs and in the future and that sort of thing. And I think there's some cautionary signs beginning to emerge about that. So I think that well, lower mortgage rates on their own are certainly a plus. You have to look at what is maybe some of the reasons causing interest rates to come down, and those are not necessarily good news for the economy.
And let's talk about Beijing asking the U.S. to meet them halfway in this trade war.
Well, halfway is, I think, a movable target at this stage, given given the parties involved here. So I don't really know what halfway means. I think that President Trump has been pretty clear that halfway is probably not what he's looking for, and I think that the Chinese have lines in the sand about what they, you know, will accept. And I don't think we're at the stage yet where they're gonna reach an agreement.
And when you talk about halfway, when it comes to some of the intellectual property stuff, I don't know that there is a halfway on that.
Exactly. Either you steal it or you don't steal it. There's not really. I mean, I'm only going to steal some of it. I mean, it's not really something that you can split the difference on, I don't think.
And President says Americans may have to endure some economic pain. Is that necessarily something that Americans are going to withstand? The economy, I mean, it could really suffer.
Well, yeah, I think that, you know, what's going on the trade front certainly in the short term has not been helping the economy. That's for sure. It's starting to see an impact in terms of corporate profitability, which feeds back into the labor market usually, not in a good way. I think that gets back to what I was saying originally about housing. So I think that there are a lot of caution signs here. I think that you're starting to see some acceptance of that by the Trump administration as they start talking about, you know, other ways to try to stimulate the economy on the tax side, also putting more pressure on the Fed. So I think they understand that this whole thing with China and trade in general, it's not cost-free, that's for sure.
Josh Shapiro, thanks for being with us. He's chief U.S. market economist at the consulting firm MFR, Inc. Up next, what to do when life gets in the way of retirement planning.
Your best stock option. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's Personal Finance Wednesday on the Noon Business Hour. In this segment, we are focusing on planning for retirement. What are some mistakes to avoid? We welcome back to the show Ed Jurtzen, certified financial planner at Mack Investment Securities here in Chicago, past national president of the Financial Planning Association. Ed, I'm just going to guess right off the bat, one of the difficulties in planning for retirement is we do not know how long we are going to live.
Hey, Cisco, thanks. Yeah, if we can answer that question, as I tell my clients, then I would be able to create the most perfect financial plan. But unfortunately, we don't know what tomorrow will bring, much less the next 25 years. So yeah, that creates at least flexibility in terms of the way you approach retirement, just because of there's so many unknown factors.
Well, also health events, right? Are you going to stay healthy for decades, or will there be some kind of a health issue?
Well, and I think that's the most unsettling thing is, as we guide retirees or recent retirees, my client's ability to kind of move about, if you would, and remain healthy in their 60s and 70s is much different than when they're in their 80s or 90s. So while you're healthy, do the things you want to do, because, again, we don't know what health events may come, which could be debilitating and or costly.
So what is the first thing to think about? You have people in their 30s and 40s listening to the show now, thinking about retirement. It's a long way off. What's one or two things they can do right now to help themselves retire well?
Well, one of the successes that we find with retirees is those who have paid off debt as much as possible have flexibility. They have the ability to decide when to retire because they don't owe money to other folks. So it creates a lot more flexibility in terms of their planning for retirement. So if you can whittle down your debt to next to nothing upon retirement, that is a great start.
And when it comes to saving, you've a certain percentage of your income, is there a certain dollar amount in mind?
Well, everyone's different. So depending on your lifestyle and how much you spend, I mean, just any kind of saving to start is a good thing, because what you'll find at the end of the month is that you'll always have bills, whether it's for Netflix or your phone or everything else. That tends to chip away at things. So stay committed to a savings plan in the good times of the market and the bad times of the market as much as you can, because, again, anything is better than just having that money whittle away from your pocketbook.
Should you plan to just not work in retirement, or should you plan on supplementing the income?
Well, and that's what people, I like to use the word financial independence rather than retirement. We talked about the rocking chair and just kind of sitting on the porch. I've had clients who are passionate about golf, and I've encouraged them to go get a job at a golf course. So not only do they get paid, but their golf is free. Another client who is passionate about fishing started a part-time job at a local outdoor store. So when in retirement, not only does he get paid, but also gets a steep discount on his gear. So what a great opportunity to engage in a passionate endeavor and get paid for it.
Good advice. Ed Jurtzen, thanks for being with us. Ed is a certified financial planner at MAC Investment Securities. Still ahead on this Personal Finance Wednesday, money management for college students. The top stories on News Radio WBBM. Lessons in money management are important as students head off to college. We'll learn more. Second dose of Personal Finance Wednesday. JP Morgan will shut down its Chase Pay app early next year. We'll find out what's behind the decision. Police southwest of Chicago have two suspects in custody following a carjacking and a lengthy high-speed chase. President Trump moves to end long-standing federal court agreements that limit how long immigrant children can be kept in detention. On Wall Street, the Dow up 274 points, the NASDAQ is up 76, and the S&P is up 25 points. Oil and gold both flat today, getting cloudier in Chicagoland as the afternoon goes along. Heading to a high of 85 degrees, there is a chance for some rain showers to develop later this afternoon. Right now, it's 81 degrees. The Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Markets are gaining ground today. To talk about it, we're joined by Art Hogan, Chief Market Strategist at National Securities, based in New York. Art, what do you make of what you're seeing today? Up right about 1% on the major indexes.
Yeah, that's a great question. It's interesting. We've been in quite a roller coaster ride this month, and certainly over the last couple of weeks. And when you look at that roller coaster ride, we're almost back to where we started the month. We're down about a little less than 2% in the S&P 500. And that includes a down 800-point day last week when seemingly the sky was falling. I think the biggest catalyst in this market right now are where we stand on U.S.-China trade and will that precipitate a recession. And the news flow we get on that sort of comes and goes. And today we're less concerned about that. Yields on U.S. Treasuries have lifted a bit, and we seem to be in lockstep with those. And we have some pretty good reports on the part of the economy that's strong, the consumer. And a couple of the consumer-facing names had some blockbuster reports, both Target and Lowe's. So we're at a place right now where we know the economy is doing well, at least as it faces the consumer. Manufacturing is not doing as well, and we're trying to figure out what that means for the future and where stocks should be priced.
Now, certainly ups and downs better than just straight down. I mean, I think we'd certainly rather have that. But in that volatility, just that roller coaster, are there concerns? Are there warning signs in that?
Yeah, there certainly are. I think the biggest warning sign is, hey, this is the last couple of weeks of August. We've got summertime volumes. We've got lack of participation. You know a lot of people are still on the beach. So that really adds to volatility, right? So there's less liquidity in markets. If someone wants to manifest an expression in the market, whether it's bearish or bullish, it's going to get exaggerated. And I think that's really turned up over the last couple of weeks. So I think that's part of it. The second concern really is, what is the bond market telling us? Now, the bond market inverted for a couple of hours. It didn't close inverted, but that, you know, historically has been a warning sign. And is the bond market telling us the economy is slowing down more than the stock market is? Or is the bond market telling us, hey, we're the only U.S. Treasury that has an integer in its yield, and that's drawing a lot of global capital? I think it's probably more of the latter than it is the former, but it's certainly, you know, one of the issues we have right now. But clearly right now we're in an economy where the consumer is doing better than the corporate, and hard to know how long they can last, but the consumer is a much larger part of GDP than businesses are.
Well, that's where you have the Bank of America CEO saying that's going to keep us out of a recession, essentially. The consumer is going to keep the economy going.
Right. And then and the consumer is confident and strong at a time when it's the most important time for them to be such. Right. So it's back to school and holiday shopping. And, you know, the good news is that's happening pretty nicely here. I think that the tricky part with all of that is if, in fact, we escalate with China on that last bundle or $300 billion worth of goods that they export to us, almost 80% of those face the consumer directly. And that's not going to help. I think most of the original tariffs, the goods that have been placed with a 25% tariff or levied 25% tariffs, really are middle goods. They're things that are used in manufacturing and not the final good that goes directly to the consumer. So I think that if we can stay at a place where we're not escalating with China, where we continue to try to have negotiations, we have conversations, we give them a 90-day window for Huawei, we actually don't put the 10% tariff on until December and maybe never, we may be able to have a market that or an economy that keeps itself out of recession. I think the reverse would be true if we do escalate and go to the all the way to the hilt and put 25% tariffs on everything.
One of the story stocks we're following today is Target. It popped, and it just keeps growing. It's up more than 19% today.
Yeah, it's amazing the haves and have-nots right now in retail, right? So I would throw Walmart into that category, Costco certainly, Home Depot and Lowe's putting in a good performance. Target's been one of those stories as well, and what Target has done is has been amazing, right? So great leadership, great execution, finding the right brand mix that consumers want at the right price point, having that right combination of ordering online, picking up in store, being able to return things, so that omni-channel presence, and obviously that standalone store concept like Walmart, Costco, Target, Home Depot, and Lowe's is doing much better than the mall-based concept, which is, as you know, the department stores and everything in between.
And another story stock is Lowe's. Its stock also up significantly.
Yeah, first time in quite a while that their same-store sale growth was larger than Home Depot's. It's happened about 3 times in 5 years on any given quarter. So they were actually doing a nice job in their businesses. We would think with the kind of low interest rates we're having and the kind of pickup in demand for housing that we're having, even though there's an inventory supply issue in housing, that the do-it-yourself home repair folks like Home Depot and Lowe's are going to continue to have a long runway in front of them. Their execution at Lowe's clearly better, and even with a move that it's had today, it still trades at a lower multiple than Home Depot does, which has been the leader of the pack for a while.
Yeah, Lowe's up about 10% today. Now, two significant companies, Lowe's, you got Home Improvement, Target, you have retail. Two of those companies having really strong numbers here. That seems to be a good sign for the overall economy.
Well, it certainly does. And what it tells you is that the death of the American consumer has certainly been exaggerated, right? So when we think about all the things we hear about in the news and how slow the economy is and you know, we're heading to a recession because we've got an inverted yield curve, you have to step back and remember, well, that may be true for corporations and the corporate side of the economy, right? But remember that the consumer being about 68% of GDP, right, and that remains strong. Why is that? We've got unemployment at a 50-year low. Slowly rising wages, lower energy costs. So a lot of those things that drive consumer activity and confidence are actually working right now. And then the beneficiaries are those retailers that have found the right way to compete with Amazon. And that is the, you know, kind of the story for us. It's the perfect time of year for us to see strength in the consumer as we head into that all-important holiday shopping season.
Art Hogan, thanks so much. Art is Chief Market Strategist at National Securities. Up next, part two of Personal Finance Wednesday, sending kids off to college with money management skills.
An economy of words. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Personal Finance Wednesday. In this segment, we're making sure students are prepared to handle money as they begin their college lives. We're joined by Craig Bolanos, founding partner and chief executive officer at Wealth Management Group, based in Inverness and Downers Grove. Craig, good to have you back on the program. And this is, if I understand it correctly, pretty personal here for you.
This is incredibly personal because we're sending our oldest boy off to college and we're hopping in the minivan and traveling north to the great state of Michigan on Saturday. So I think these talking points aren't just what people should be doing, it's what we're actually doing. And I think the first thing everyone is struggling with, us included, was how much money to actually give your child as a monthly allowance in college.
Yeah, and so how do you figure that out? Obviously, it depends on each parent's income, but how do you figure out what's a healthy amount to give the student to work with?
Well, as clients are asking me this, the first thing I'm doing is reminding them that a pizza costs a heck of a lot more than it did some 25 to 30 years ago. And what we're finding is that depending on the meal plan that the child, the student has on campus, that number probably needs to be somewhere between 100 on the low side, 300 on the very, very high side per month. So what we told Connor is, hey, you're starting off with 200 a month for the first 2 months, and we're going to revisit thereafter.
And you make him give an account for how he spends that money before you decide whether to give him more?
Well, you know what we're doing is we're kind of doing this as a partnership. I mean, that's kind of what higher education is. So we've gone ahead and established a bank account with a banking institution that also has branches both at the school and here to make it easy for us to transfer money back and forth and kind of monitor. But one of the things we were discussing as a family just the other week is it's not going to be enough for Connor to have a debit card where he can go ahead and do his spending, which gives him access to the ATMs. He's also going to have to go away with a credit card just in case something pops up as an emergency.
And along with that, I would imagine is credit monitoring to make sure that no one steals his identity or anything like that.
You know what? I am so happy you said that, because study after study proves that those in the 18 to 24 age category are the most susceptible to identity theft because they just haven't been taught, like we are at work, to be so careful with our passwords, so careful with our personally identifiable information, and given the students, not as bad as it used to be, but they still get mailed things like pre-approved credit card offers. And how many students do you know that have a shredder in their dorm room?
Hey, what if they call you and go, Dad, I've already burned through my money here, and I still got another week in the month left. What do you do? Do you send more money?
Well, I tell you what, we've already told our son, welcome to adulthood. There is no bailout coming. And I'm actually, in a weird way, Cisco, I'm looking forward to it, because I know that our oldest son, Connor, is eventually going to have a month where he's got 3 weeks worth of money and 4 weeks worth of bills. And I kind of look forward to teaching him a lesson about a little financial suffering and humility, because it's going to go an awful long way to teaching a lifetime of basic money management skills. So, nope. No bailout when they overspend.
Yeah, definitely will. Thank you, Craig Bolanos, founding partner and chief executive officer at Wealth Management Group in Inverness and Downers Grove, joining us on this Personal Finance Wednesday. This time tomorrow, Technology Thursday. Still to come, J.P. Morgan is giving up on its Chase Pay app.
News that makes you money. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
After 5 years, J.P. Morgan is set to shut down its Chase Pay app sometime next year. Let's get the latest from Jenny Serrain, finance reporter at Bloomberg News based in New York. Jenny, for people who maybe aren't customers, maybe haven't heard about this, what was the Chase Pay app? What is it?
So hi, guys. It was basically Chase's kind of proprietary method of payment that they were trying to gain adoption for both in-store and online and in retailers' mobile apps. So basically, when you'd go to checkout, instead of paying with your card or with Apple Pay, you'd pay with Chase Pay.
And so does this mean if they're shutting down the standalone app, it means it didn't take off as much as they'd hoped?
Yeah, I think, you know, mobile payments have had a tough time here in the U.S. They just haven't taken off as much as they have in other markets around the world. And so, yeah, they weren't getting the traction that they wanted in the in-store environment. And so they're shutting down their standalone mobile app. They are still keeping and I guess still pushing deeper into trying to get online and merchants to accept it in their mobile app. So when people go to check out online, they should still see that option at a variety of different retailers. And so they're just basically saying, you know, this in-store experiment didn't work. We're going to put all of our effort now to e-commerce and mobile commerce.
So where does the profit come from? They get a little chunk of every sale when someone uses Chase Pay?
Yeah, that's right. And but, you know, it's really more about the enrollment aspects and just the idea of kind of owning the customer. Payments is such a competitive space. And so banks really hate the idea of having anyone else kind of step in and really, own their customers. So when you have options like PayPal or Apple Pay, where you've got these kind of intermediaries stepping in and talking to your customer and helping them kind of pick their financial, decisions, banks hate that. And so this was, I think, you know, a little more about the customer relationship aspect and making sure that they don't get displaced versus some huge revenue driver.
Yeah, they really want them siloed into all their products. Yesterday, we talked about the Apple credit card and how that's certainly an effort to get its users more locked in. I guess it's important for banks to really keep you using all of their products instead of just one here and there.
Absolutely. I mean, when you see big technology giants like that who really have, you know, this great user experience and really a good handle on how to do things in terms of the mobile and online world, banks get worried and they want to make sure that they're not having these different third parties kind of step in and take up more of their customers' mind share when it comes to dealing with their finances.
I expect there'll still be a push for mobile pay to grab a greater share of the market, given the convenience, given the fact that it's much more secure than some other methods. So it's not like that's going away.
Definitely, you'll still see a push. I mean, especially when you have the likes of Apple with this Apple card, like you said, you'll definitely see more of that. But I do think in terms of the banks, their big push right now is actually these new cards that they're all introducing, the tap-to-pay cards. And so it's the same functionality as mobile pay, where when you're checking out, you're just tapping your card. But that seems to be the big push on the payments front when it comes to the banking side right now.
Thanks for all the details, Jenny Serene, finance reporter at Bloomberg News.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.